It's that time again. Time for Fish and Frank, the Blaine Tarpon, and Captain Josh Olive to all get together, form into one cohesive unit, and...
Are we going to make Voltron?
Bring forth... Could make Voltron. What's a Voltron?
Nothing. Okay. It's after your time.
I don't even know what it is.
Okay, it was a crazy Japanese cartoon where these dudes... You got like five of them, and they're each an individual lion robot thing, and together they form this giant robot dude called Voltron. And
oh, I do remember that.
Yeah, you got to bring them all together to form Voltron, and then he's got a sword, and he chops things in half in space.
All right, chops things in half in space.
It makes perfect sense if you're watching Voltron.
Yeah, I get it. You know, it's Voltron. And we are going to form Voltron. Many rings forward. I don't know what they did. I'm assuming cartoon characters always put their rings together to
something. There weren't any Wonder Rings or Power Rings in this case. Right. It was just the robot lions.
Okay. Hey, you don't need power rings when you got a robot lion. And we don't need power rings because we have the robot Robert. So.
Nice.
You know, nice hey, touch. Everybody's got their stuff here, you know. just to start off, FWC, who I'm usually a big fan of, is now political, spiteful, mean, nasty, underhanded, and all around, what the heck is going on with the FWC? I don't understand. Well, they closed Snook and Redfish, trying to get somebody elected, because there's no other reason to close it, because nobody knows exactly what happened during the last few months. But because one guy wants to get elected, they want to say one guy has done nothing for 30 years and this other guy's going to be the great guy. And while it is true the one guy's done nothing for 30 years, is the other guy going to do any better? I think it's all a political power play, and I'm sad to see that FWC is now playing politics with our fish. And we had found out that while Snook was closed in Charlotte County, it was open in DeSoto County. And according to the way FWC has usually handled stuff like this, is if you catch fish in one of these areas where something's open, but you have to go back through a closed area, you catch your fish, you do, you know, do everything properly, legally, but when you go back with your boat, you cannot stop in the areas where it is, but you proceed directly to your home port, put the boat on the ramp, or, you know, on the trailer, and go home, or however you do it. But because, and it may be because I called up there to ask about it, all of a sudden they freaked out, got a little, best word I can say is pissy. I mean, I don't understand why FWC would go out of their way to act the way they are. And it's not the local guys, it's literally the Tallahassee people have become pissy. Because now they say, if you try coming with a boat from DeSoto County into Charlotte County, they're going to ticket you, they're going to fine you, they're going to ruin your life, they're going to do everything they can to make this as miserable of a thing as possible. And I don't get it. This is not the way FWC has ever acted. They've always been amazing ambassadors, and I think they've just been in Tallahassee too long, and it may be, just possibly, too many people appointed to the FWC Council because they're a buddy of somebody, or a nephew of somebody, or a friend of somebody, or somebody owes them a favor, or they're sitting around bored, and, hey, can you put me on a council?
Well, that's how the FWC works. I mean, those folks are all appointed by whoever happens to be the sitting governor to be on the commission. There's no requirement for you to have any kind of scientific knowledge or... Am I even making noise anymore? I can't hear me.
I don't... Yeah, you are, and I don't know why it's not coming through.
You need no scientific knowledge or regulation background or anything at all other than the governor picked you because he likes you to be on the commission. And that's as simple as it is to get on the commission. You just have to be pointed to by the governor and say, you are on the commission. And you, even though you might have years and years of regulation experience and a scientific background, are not. You might still get to be FWC staff, but that's about it. But I have to disagree with you about FWC's method of managing fish that are closed in one area but not closed in another. Because, for example, gag grouper. There is a special season that opens only for certain months of the year for four counties in the northern part of the state. And that's a state waters season. It's not a federal season, state waters. If you are gag grouper fishing in those state waters and you catch a gag grouper that is perfectly legal for you to have, when you land that fish ashore, you have to land it at one of those four counties. If you land it in a different county, then you've broken the law. And it's been that way ever since they set that up. Same way with scallops. Where you have scallop season, it's in tightly defined areas. And if you land your scallops outside of those areas, you've broken the law. Because they have no way of knowing for sure where you collected your scallops.
Okay. So, you don't think they're being pissy, and I think they're being pissy.
I think that they're being what they've been before. Which is, I mean, I think they're treating this the same way that they've treated other fisheries that are closed in certain areas but open in others. Now, the exception is when a fishery is closed in state waters but open in federal. For example, a hammerhead shark. Hammerhead sharks, closed in state waters, no harvest is allowed. Federal waters, you're okay. You can harvest one. I forget what the size limit is on hammerhead specifically. I think it's 72 inches. It might be 84. If you legally harvest that hammerhead shark in federal waters, you can bring it into your boat and you can drive directly back to the home port, which could be where you dock your boat, it could be your backyard boat lift, it could be the boat ramp where you left from. You have to transit it from federal waters all the way through state waters without stopping. You can't get lunch, you can't refuel, you can't stop and catch a redfish on the way in, nothing like that. And if you do that, then you're legal. Because there is a specific transit law, an exception, that allows you to do it.
All right. Now, I've weighed in. I think they're just being pissy because we found a loophole in the law. You know, an open county in an area where they closed other counties. Now, Robert, where do you land on this?
Honestly, yeah, I'm going to agree with you on that one. I mean, I just think... I don't like how they went about doing it. You know, I think that there's been certain times where they've closed seasons, emergency closure on certain things because there was no even rough science on something. I believe that this one was done really strictly 100% by emotion. You know, flat out, all the hoopla on the internet and regular media and everything
so
else.
This is social media science.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's all this really is. I mean, because, you know, was it bad? Absolutely. But the two species that they picked, I'd kind of understand it if they just did it to the snook. If they just did it to the snook, I would get the importance of we don't have the science to back it up right now because there were so many fish out on the beach spawning when the major part of that red tide hit. That I could at least kind of understand a little bit, but when they threw redfish into it, that's when I knew it was a politically driven social media event that drove them to this. Because that's all everyone's been whining about for a year now with redfish.
So it's social media science backed up by TV nightly news.
Yep,
so,
exactly.
Because the nightly news doesn't get their news from news sources anymore or legitimate channels. They just watch social media and then report on anything that they hear on social media as long as it's to their, you know, agenda leanings.
That's not that new of a thing. I mean, before we had social media, they had man on the street reporting, which is they would have a news story, then they would go talk to random people and ask them what they thought about the news story rather than focus on what does the news story really mean. Let's just ask random people what they think about it. Now, I would like to defend myself, if defense is actually needed, by saying that we're looking at two different issues here. The necessity of the closure of snook and redfish is different from they're not allowing you to try.
I was on topic. Robert decided to jump into that was okay. Yeah, but on the secondary subject, okay, we'll give you a second and we'll get to the fishing report.
I don't think that the closure of redfish was necessary at this time. The snook, it made sense because, you know, we don't know how hard of a hit those fish took, and we won't know until we get through at least this fall and maybe into spring. But redfish, Yeah, that was closed basically because what Robert said. People have been complaining about it, and that's all it came down
to. Social media science.
Yeah.
So, which is a term I just came up with. But I'm going to say, you know, the big thing that I understand about this is looking a little larger picture is most or some of the snook, I would say at least 50% of them, go to the beaches to spawn. Now, do I think 10, 20, 30% of the snook were killed? Maybe. I'm leaning more on the lower end of that. I don't think 1 year, one kill is a major thing. And it's not like the freeze where it affected from Tampa all the way down through the 10,000 islands, the East Coast, the West Coast. It affected all these other areas. Most of the snook, most of the red tide, most of the kills were in very small areas, very specific places. Snook go out to the reefs to get away from it. They came back up inside to get away from it. And, you know, by obvious, just small little hints, there's already snook back in Stump Pass Marina where you can go hand feed them. The fish showed up, the red tide left, the fish came back home.
They came back to Gasparilla, too.
And they're back at Gasparilla. They're back in all these other places. So this is knee-jerk political maneuvering. This is about people trying to get elected. It's social media science. I don't believe it was as big a deal as everybody else does because I was a commercial fisherman. I watched how much fish we landed each week, each day, each month. I know how many tons of fish come in. And this... this was a bad thing to happen, but I don't think it was catastrophic. But I'm not happy with FWC. I'm not happy with the political maneuvering. I'm not happy with the social media science. That's all I'm putting out there. What I am happy about is that we get to do a fishing report, and the fishing is actually not bad. August ended up being a little better than average fishing for Charlotte Harbor. Now, if you want to comment on something, Josh, I think that FWC claiming that there was red tide at a Punta Gorda boat ramp while yeah. the river was at 11 and a half feet proves that this is politically driven agenda science, social media science. Is it possible for red tide to live in saltwater of any degree?
Saltwater, yes. Freshwater, no.
Is it possible for red tide to live in fresh water?
So there's two possibilities with that, which was on the latest FWC report from yesterday afternoon. If you look at the report, the location-by-location report, not the map, which is just, you know, dummy dots, but the actual spots where it's collected, they show that the Estero Bay Aquatic Preserves collected a sample at the Punta Gorda boat ramp, and they don't specify which one is the Punta Gorda boat ramp, but doesn't
or
really matter
where it is. They could be talking about Burnt Store to
it just says Charlotte Harbor. But if you look at the report, the spot before that is also the Punta Gorda boat ramp, where there was also a collection on the same day, which was the 4th, by another group, which showed that there was no red tide present. So one of two things: either it was intentional and politically driven, or it was just an accident. I mean, it could go either way on that. Somebody may just not have been paying attention when they copy pasted.
Yeah, I mean, it's just weird. But Robert, your thoughts?
Well, I think they were just dead wrong and screwed up and just reinforced that they do stuff that, I don't know, they don't pay attention close enough. They don't have enough people checking on what they're doing.
Well, okay. It doesn't help that they put those out on Friday late in the day. So it's literally probably the last thing that somebody does before they go home for the weekend. So they've already checked out.
Yeah, and we've seen over the last few years, you know, how people release stuff on Friday, so, you know, it makes a big deal and nobody can get to it. But anyway,
my only suggestion from earlier was
I'm just disappointed.
If you wanted to make a change, then make friends with the governor, whoever the new governor is going to be, and see if you can get yourself appointed to the commission.
So basically, we find out who the next governor is, and once that happens, we go up, we buy him lunch and a couple of drinks, and get appointed to the FWC.
Yeah, start making chums.
Okay. All right. Well, now at least we know how to do it. Okay. Peace River Systems. I haven't heard a lot about up on the Peace River, except that According to what the science were saying, and there should be some really nice snook and redfish up on the Peace River. No real reports yet.
No.
I haven't heard of anybody going up to try it.
Well, I've only heard about a few redfish being caught up there. I mean, literally just a handful, two or three. But the guys who are going up there doing snook are actually doing pretty well. They just don't tend to talk about it a whole lot, because the guys who are successful snook fishing on the river are guys who've been doing this for a while. You know, it's not like they usually fish down around Turtle and Bull Bay and they decide on a whim, well, I'm going to go up the Peace River and see what I can find. It's not usually those guys who are being successful. The guys who are actually catching fish are the river rats, who know that area inside and out, and they're being a lot more hushed mouth about where they're catching their fish. However, I have seen some nice photos of fish caught on the river.
And I think people are going up trying it. But the one thing about the river is it's flowing pretty good. We just got done checking it on fishandfranks.com, you know, weather and tides, go down the bottom, click Peace River button, and it was at 11 and a half feet, which 11 foot is flood stage. And when the river's flowing that much water, you cannot get red tide north of Cape Hayes. And because if the Peace River is flowing that much, the Myakka's probably right on its heels. That's just too much fresh water for red tide to live in.
Yeah.
But obviously somebody made a mistake, or a political movement, one or the other. So.
And if you do want to fish the river, I wouldn't be going too far up right now, because it is flowing pretty hard.
What I would do is, if you want to do a little bit of checkout on the river, go up to the 760 boat ramp. You can fish right from the ramp there. Be careful if you're going out in a boat. There's a lot of weird currents, and most of the people down here are not used to running a river. So rivers are tricky. You want to be careful. Double check everything you do. But just you can do some amazing fishing. My favorite lure up there is the Bleeding Shiner Rattle Trap, because I can cast it out, let it drop along the banks, and figure out where it is. What I'm looking for is cut banks, and I'll usually take like a bucktail jig, cast it up against there, close to the shore, and see, watch the fall. And I tell that by how my line's moving. And because what I don't want to drop a rattle trap in there with the treble hooks and get it hung up. I can test the bank with a bucktail jig, that single hook, lead head in front of it, very unlikely to get snagged up, you know, or much less likely than a rattle trap. So I test the area with a bucktail jig, and then I'll go through throwing that Bleeding Shiner rattle trap. Very productive areas up there around 760. I'll use a lot of Rapalas, floating Rapala divers, bring them down a few feet, let them come back up to the surface, down a few feet. But anyway, we're going to move on. We're going to move down to I-75. Anybody heard anything?
A couple of black drum and a few juvenile tarpon in the early mornings. Other than that, for me, it's been pretty quiet. You, Mr. Olive?
Same thing.
Yeah, it hasn't been great.
I think a lot of the guys who would fish up there are either going further up, where they're thinking they're going to go catch some snook and reds, or they're going further down.
I will tell you what most of the people are doing. They're going up river to party.
Well, yeah, there's that too.
I mean, there is 200 boats up there partying, and one guy over there fishing somewhere. I mean, you go up there, just go slow when you go in front of the people. Back off, idle. Don't throttle down and create a bigger wake. Go all the way to dead idle and go by. You're sightseeing anyway. And there's been some of those parties. There's some pretty good sightseeing, I will say. And lots of unusual boats, campgrounds, all kinds of cool stuff. If you really want to get an idea of what life was like here a few years ago, you know, before we had a lot of this stuff, people partied on the river a lot. And they're doing a lot of it now. Literally dozens to hundreds of boats partying on the river. So go slow. If you don't know where you're going, A, you won't get into shallow water. B, you won't create unsafe situations with people swimming in the water, because there's a lot of people swimming. A lot of people partaking of adult beverages and then anchored swimming up on the boats and swimming. And so,
and swinging out on ropes and all that kind of stuff.
It's actually really cool upriver. Get a taste of old Florida. But remember, if you're not willing to go slow and, you know, be a considerate person, stay the hell off the river. Period. So, you know, if you're going to do what you're going to do because it's your right to do it, Boca Grande is a really nice place.
Sandbar, that's where you should be.
Yeah, go out to Gaspar Island. There's sandbars. There's cool stuff out there, and you can ride around and act like a maniac. And all right, but stay off the river. All right, 41 Bridge.
Kind of the same scenario as 75, been some black drum, a few juvenile tarpon, a couple of catch and release snook, and then there's been one guy who hooked two cobia out there whilst fishing on the bottom for black drum, but they were both very small cobia. He said they're maybe 2 foot long. The one he didn't even bother measuring. He said the other one was just a hair bigger, but it still came up way short.
Right. I've been hearing about a few redfish on the south end of the bridge, too. The north end hasn't been too hot with all the construction going on down there, but the south end seems to have had a few around.
It's not too bad.
And Lashley Pier.
I got nothing.
I heard about some small trout caught over there, and that was it.
Okay, and that takes us over to Bayshore Pier.
Nothing. Again, I've got nothing over there. You need to tell him. Did you tell him about the other Bayshore
Pier? We talked about it last week.
Okay.
Yeah, the one they don't know if it's ever going to open again or not.
Yeah.
They've got to figure out what they're going to do. And it's a very historical pier.
Yeah.
Josh, a lot of people don't realize that was one of the original commercial piers here, where they would unload cattle phosphate trying to work the up at the upper end, and then finding out they had to run the railroad out to Gasparilla because it was just not enough water in Charlotte Harbor to make it commercially viable. I mean, they couldn't get the boats in.
That was built as a cattle dock. It was much, much longer and took you out to about 8 feet of water out there, and they would literally march the cattle down that pier, that dock, right onto the boats. I don't think
marching cattle. Okay.
And more, more like whips and cracking and yeah.
That's one of the things.
Get along.
They think the actual reason that they called the old people in Florida crackers was because of the whips they used on the cattle.
Yep.
Cracking the whips.
Old cow hunter whips.
It wasn't because we all look like soda crackers.
No, it was not.
It's possible.
I learned to use one of those whips when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things that you want to do when you're young, because you're not really strong enough to leave permanent marks on yourself when you hit yourself with it, because you're gonna.
I actually, because of when I grew up, the whole cowboy thing was a big thing, and there was one of the guys on TV who always had a whip, and Zorro was one, and I forget who the cowboy guy was, but between Zorro and this other guy, every kid wanted a bullwhip. You
yep.
just had to have one. And you're right, the marks stay a long time.
Yes, they do.
Because that, the actual cracking sound is because the end of the whip is breaking the sound barrier.
That's what
it's
you're hearing.
It's going that fast. It breaks the sound barrier and
it's
to get it to
pop. It's a sonic
pop.
Boom is what it is. A little tiny sonic boom.
And if it's going that fast, okay, it hurts. And usually you did it to yourself. You did one time to one of your friends and learned that wasn't a good idea.
Right, yes.
So you would practice on your own, and you get all these whip marks all over you. So.
And the thing is, with the cattle, you never wanted to hit the cow. You wanted the whole point of the crack was to get that crack as close as you could to the ear of the cow without actually hitting it. You're moving it by sound.
There was some of the old stagecoach drivers, and I know I shouldn't be doing this, but some of the stagecoach drivers would brag they could knock a horse fly off of their horse without touching the horse. They were that good with bullwhips.
I'm sure some of those guys were.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah,
a lot of practice.
I feel bad for the horse and him while he's practicing. Okay.
And those guys went on to become great fly fishermen.
Yeah, I've seen a few of the guys do it. And, you know, the funniest part about it is the people who cannot cast a fly rod. I mean, they're literally just, I don't know, but they're always the ones who say they're instructors.
Right.
If somebody comes up to you and says, oh, yeah, I'm a fly fishing instructor and I do this and that, you're going, oh, God, I got a great charter, you know. the first thing I did when I was charting with somebody after a few times is I learned when they told me they were fly fishing instructor, I would tell them about one of the other captains because it was going to be painful. All right, Port Charlotte Canal Systems and breaking the sonic booms on fly fishing.
Black drum, been some redfish, a lot of little snook. Sand bream have still been pretty popular with a handful of people. And then a whole lot of little mangrove snapper and a handful of jacks. And most of that's been within the first half a mile of the entrances of every canal, even closer than that in some instances. So it seems like the mouths of the canals have started to light up a little bit more so.
I would add to that, but Robert is my major source for Port Charlotte canal fishing news. So.
Okay, all good. All right. I got to get some of this other stuff off. You're just getting built up.
You just got to watch out for people out there trolling while you're trying to fish off the dock.
Yeah. All right. It's not proper to booby trap the canal for trolling people.
It is. No, it is actually illegal for you to do that. You're not permitted to do that. If you like, you may.
But if I get away with it, is it illegal?
Yes. Whether or not you get caught, an act is illegal regardless.
Really?
You may not get punished for it, but it still is against the law.
So it'll be between me and my maker when I'm over. Did I do the right thing or not?
If you don't get caught, yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right. Elgin Bean Pier.
Elgin Bean's been lighting up.
Trying to get out of this, Robert.
Lighting up. And it's been lightening up a little bit out there. There's been a lot of little juvenile tarpon first thing in the morning. The black drum has started to get a little bit better numbers there. Been a lot of mangrove snapper piling up around there. Most of them are on the small side, but they're at least catching them. And that's kind of about it. I've heard of a couple trout, but nothing steady of any even size or
and
small.
The snook reports just don't seem to be really going out there.
Uh-uh.
Seem to be a lot more snook up the piece than there are up the Myakka right now.
Yeah, not uncommon for the beginning of the season. Because the Peace River pumps out so much more water than the Myakka does, it's a much more alluring target. And so they're following that water flow, thinking more food. So with the more volume of water coming out of the Peace River, as the river settled down, the fish seem to
spread out a little more.
You know, go more up the Myakka. But the first thing is they're coming up the harbor, they get faced with that Peace River, and they start heading to that because of the more water volume. But the Myakka River always fills with snook. And
yeah.
It's going to be a good year. And no, I would never, and no, you should never booby trap a canal. That's like, that is absolutely a bad idea. Do not
do it. I was hoping you'd get
no
to that
one
point,
would,
but...
No one should ever do that, and I wouldn't. Promise you. Definitely.
But Frank lives on a canal, so maybe be careful driving into that canal.
No, I don't do anything to my canal. I'm not stupid. That would get caught. Okay. And I would never do that anyway. There's no reason for me to get caught.
He definitely would not.
Okay. Myakka River area, cut off, tippy canoe, the holes, whatever.
Mostly the only thing I've been hearing about has been from basically Elgin Bean right down the cut out to the marker 8 right in the center of the river system has been tarpon. Guys have been finding them there with some regularity. Other than that, I haven't heard much of over at the cutoff or anything like that.
There's been some little tarpon up in Tippy, if you want to go up into there.
Really?
Yeah.
That's nice to hear, because they used to hang out there 20, 25 years ago. I could go back up there and see a lot of little tarpon, catch a little tarpon. But over the last 15 years, 10 years, literally I haven't heard of much up there for as far as the little tarpon. It's actually... great to hear that.
Yeah, and these have been little guys. Only talked to one guy fishing the cutoff this week. He caught a handful of trout and a couple of redfish, but he said it wasn't as good up there as he thought it would be, based on the fact that there weren't any other boats up there. He thought he was going to go up there and have his own private honey hole, and it just didn't quite work out.
Okay, and let's see. South Gulf Cove canals.
Mayan cichlids.
Yeah, definitely.
Loaded down with Mayan cichlids. Get yourself some little beetle spins or some small little 2-inch size lipped plugs. Brighter colors are better for either one of those things, and work any place that looks like it might hold Mayans, which is basically any kind of tight structure.
Yeah, right along the edge of the shoreline and a dock.
Shores, grassy stuff.
Grass, docks,
mangrove edges where it's leaning in, any of that kind of stuff.
Edibility factor, Robert, Mayans?
Phenomenal eating. You know, everyone really enjoys them because they're in the cichlid family, which is Oscars. And Oscars are great eating. So are tilapia, which they're also in the cichlid family, correct?
Right. Now, if you've only ever had tilapia from the grocery store, don't assume that you're going to get the same thing when we're talking about wild cichlids. It's a totally different deal. You know, those grocery store tilapia are bred to be as bland as possible, and the wild ones actually have more of a noticeable sweet flavor, and especially if you cook them whole, cook them on the bone, you'll get a very nice flavor out of them. Not fishy at all, mild, but stronger, sweeter.
Now, is that one of them you can literally peel the bone out of, or do you have to pick the meat off the bone?
With the Mayans?
Yeah.
Yeah, usually you get the top fillet comes off real easy, the tenderloin part, but then the below part, you kind of have to pick it off the ribs.
Yeah, what I usually, the only time I'm big into that was when I was a kid, I would take the double barrel shotgun, the golden retriever, head down the river with fishing pole and a little bit of water. And I would catch my food and, you know, kill ducks and catch fish and eat them. We'd build a campfire, and I love eating panfish over a campfire. If you got a little bit of hickory, just, you know, dab some ashes on the fillet, and, you know, don't really fillet them. You just slab them off, stick them on a stick, and cook them over the fire. That's
right.
How I remember panfish. So even when I cook them now, I fillet them out and, you know, eat them, and it's good. But I constantly flash back to being 11, 12 years old and out by the river by myself with the dog and the shotguns and the fishing poles and just having a ball.
Cichlids roasting on an open fire.
That's good, Josh. I like that one.
Nice.
But actually, by Christmas time, I was definitely not going out there camping. It was northern Wisconsin, and it was bloody cold out there. And so, but in the fall, it was great. You know, duck season, come around and go out there and do all that. Wes Wall, what's going on?
A lot of redfish. Getting a lot more redfish reports, both up against the bushes and out on top of the bar. And some pretty impressive reports, actually.
Now, are these schooling reds, or are they still singles, small groups?
Mostly singles and small groups. But
we're getting there.
They're assorted sizes, literally from, you know, 15 inches all the way up to 30 inches, you know, getting some oversized fish in with them. So it's been pretty impressive. There's also, and most of the guys that are catching them are dead sticking. They're using crabs, big shrimp, cut bait, cut ladyfish, cut pinfish, stuff like that. And even live pinfish are starting to work well too.
The guys who are using shrimp are catching quite a few trout in that area. Mostly what they're finding is short fish. An occasional keeper, and even an occasional nice one, but not really the greatest trout fishing that you ever saw in your life, but that's what they seem to be catching quite a few of.
Alright. You know, it's just so weird. I'm thinking, you know, perfectly normal, and I just realized I did this, that kind of stuff when I was 10, 11, 12 years old, and today, telling somebody that, you know, their 10, 11, 12-year-old kid has got a shotgun,
right,
a fishing pole, and a dog, and going a little bit of water going down to the river,
right,
and going to be out there for a couple of
SWAT's
days.
SWAT's going to show up.
Yeah, yeah, you know, you're going to jail because, you know, you're a bad parent.
That's child abuse.
And I didn't know anybody who was, you know, that age that didn't have their own shotgun.
Right. It was the times.
Yeah, but I mean, I had a nice one, 16-gauge double barrel.
Now nice. They're only allowed to have guns on video games.
Right. They just can mass murder on video games.
Right, kill people, shoot hookers in the face,
yeah,
so shoot at cops, that kind of stuff. That's okay.
Okay. That was probably, what do they say now, TMI, too much information?
Too much.
Yeah, I just didn't need to go there. Okay, Cape Hayes, Muddy Bay.
Muddy Bay's had a few redfish showing up in it. There's been those snook have been stacked up out in front of it in that trough that leads over towards Turtle. And then Cape Hayes, honestly, I haven't had anything decent off of there this week. How about you, Josh?
A couple guys who were shark fishing on the deeper edges of it. They were doing okay.
What'd they get?
Black tips.
Black tips? Little guys?
Yeah, they were, you know, okay. We're talking about sub 4 foot fish.
Okay. So. That's not too bad.
No, it's not. It's fun size fish if you want to use light tackle on them. These guys were hoping for some bigger ones, and they had a little bit heavier tackle, so they weren't quite as excited as they should have been.
Yeah, one thing about shark fishing, I always take some very light rods as well as some very heavy rods because you just don't know which kind of sharks are going to show up. My kid is coming down. Frank will be down another week or two. And his buddy who's getting married wants to catch a shark. So I'm trying to pay attention to these shark reports because we've got Captain Carl going to take us out shark fishing. And I'm hoping to find some of those smaller black tips so they can actually hold a shark before we look for the big bull sharks and stuff. The big lemons and bulls should be more frequent this time of year, right?
Yeah, the lemons should definitely be more frequent. So that's still fun.
Yeah, their whole thing is they want to catch a big shark. You know, they're from way up north. They only get to see sharks in movies.
Right.
So to get them out, let them hold one of the sharks, be able to play with them a little bit, feel the skin, you know, smooth one way, rough the other, stealth aircraft.
Get bit by a shark, have a scar to show off for the rest of your life.
Scars heal, chicks stick scars, you know.
Exactly. The wound heals, but the story remains.
Yep. So I'm kind of paying a little bit more attention to that. Anyway, on Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, anything going on?
A lot of redfish, a lot of snook, quite a few small trout with a few bigger, I'd say barely legal fish. And then there has been some juvenile tarpon scattered throughout all those places too, especially in that deeper trough on the back end of Turtle Bay. And on the back end of Bull Bay going out towards Sandfly.
Handful of pompano reports out of there also.
Inside?
Yeah.
There you go. That's not too bad. I haven't heard much about those. The last pompano I heard about were right out in front of Bull and Turtle, but it's been very scattered, mixed reports.
Yeah, it hasn't been stellar. It's been one of those things where, you know, you're kind of accidentally coming across them.
I think that's most of the way pompano get caught in this area. Because
yeah, pompano, flounder, they're never intentional for most people.
You know, if you do go out trying to find them, it can be arduous. It's like trying to find, we have a lot of mahi-mahi in the Gulf of Mexico, but it's better for them to find you than you going to look for them. If go fishing for something, and many times these mahi-mahi will just show up. But if you go out actually looking for something, it's like trying to find deer 2 days into the season. You know, all of a sudden, a day before the season was, there's deer everywhere, deer season opens, and they're gone. And it's the same thing with going to look for mahi-mahi. If it's something you really want, I don't know if the, you know, Poseidon is going to cooperate, say, okay, here, you can have some of these.
Do you like saying mahi-mahi? You like saying it twice?
Mahi-mahi-mahi-mahi-mahi-mahi-mahi-mahi.
Yeah, I just like to say it once. It feels weird to me to say mahi-mahi.
You just say mahi?
I just say mahi. See, it seems quicker.
Yes, it's less expedient, but not as correct.
I don't like it when people call them dolphin.
You don't like it when people call them dolphin?
No. Because too many people think of flipper when you say dolphin.
Robert?
Down here, the locals know them as dolphin, but a lot of people that are visiting don't know them as dolphin.
But here's a weird one. When I'm talking about just the fish in
general. Possibly going to be a weird one from Josh. Who would have ever thought? What? This is not something that ever happens. Well, now, oh, my God.
Now I don't want to tell you.
When I'm so interested.
When I'm just talking about the fish, I call them mahi. But when we're talking about specific sizes, and we're talking about the little guys, I say schoolie dolphin or chicken dolphin. Isn't that weird?
You like to just confuse everybody, mahi, don't you?
Right? Schoolie mahi, chicken mahi, but it doesn't come out right.
It's not as confusing as you think, Robert. It's just a little
distorted.
I can't find the right word, but I will ponder the word.
Robert's just upset because he said I was confusing everybody on the radio show this morning talking about redfish limits and places where you can have them.
You mean on 92.9, your show that's on Kix Country, 92.9,
that
every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 o'clock?
That was the show this morning, yes. Okay. The show that you'll be able to listen to later on today by going to RadioWaterline.com.
Yeah, okay. You were going to be able to do it here, but, you know, Josh just decided he wasn't going to do that, so.
I did?
I don't know.
I remember deciding that. I don't remember what happened.
You just got sidetracked.
Oh, Josh spaced out? No, tell me it's not so. Okay, Cape Hayes Danger Reef.
Cape Hayes, basically, I've heard about a few Spanish mackerel off of it. There's been a better number of mangrove snappers starting to show up on both Danger and Cape Hayes. Other than that, it's been pretty quiet. What do you got?
I never seem to talk to anybody who fishes there.
No?
No.
You should try fishing there sometime.
Forgotten spots.
They're fun spots. Usually you can bend a rod there.
I like Danger Reef when the tugboat was still sticking out of the water, or the shrimp boat, or whatever it was. That was awesome time to be able to be there, and you could still see the wheelhouse was sticking out of the water, and you could fish around it. It was tons of cobia and all that. I would love to drag another boat there and just drop it in, because
right.
There was one there before.
It still says on the chart that there's a wreck there.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, we should be able to just take another boat and put it in its place and have it sticking out of the water a little bit and wait for it to fall down.
I would like it better if you said the danger part with an Australian accent. It would make it sound more dangerous.
I don't know how to say danger.
Danger.
Danger?
Danger Reef.
Okay. Yeah, sorry.
It sounds more impactful.
I believe you.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'll work on that. Gasparilla Sound, and I actually have to go out and get, before you guys leave, I'm going to get your opinion of where Boca Bayou is, because Boca Bayou can be literally two to four different places, and it can encompass a larger area or a much or smaller area, depending upon the person who's thinking about it. So I'm going to get you guys to point on the map where each of you think Boca Bayou is. And then I got Morris coming in, going to do the same thing, because I've had quite a few emails about, we talk about Boca Bayou, but I don't have any maps of where it is. And some of them are pretty frustrated with me because I haven't got the page up yet. But it's a question as to who's saying it. It's a local area. It's a cool name. And some are putting on the north end of the island, where you have all those docks. Some, it's almost centerized where you go into the golf course canal. And other people have it actually further north. I'm finding out this is not a specific place where this is Boca Bayou, but more Boca Bayou is kind of a place on the inside of Gasparilla Island, created by the person.
Right. For a lot of people, it's literally the whole inside of Gasparilla Island. That's Boca Bayou. It's the the backwater area created by Gasparilla Island.
So
I always placed it towards the middle where the golf course canal is.
But I've talked to a few people because I like to be actually fairly accurate when I put up these places and maps. I'm having a real hard time with this one because me, I always thought of Boca Bayou, believe it or not, and the north end where that bay is in there, that to me was always Boca Bayou.
Where Henry's is?
It's just kind of a little indentation in the island, kind of
south
towards
of,
the north end.
South of Henry, Uncle Henry's.
And yeah, south of Uncle Henry's, there's kind of a bay. There's several docks and things in there. I used to go in there and fish for a lot of black drum, some redfish, snook fishing underneath those docks. It was always pretty good. And then now I'm learning that most people think of it as closer to the middle, or like you say, the entire thing. So
yeah.
I'm having a real hard time getting this. It might be when I put the page up, this could be it, this could be it, or this could be it, depending upon which one of the guys you talk
to. Who'd you learn it from?
Right. Who told you where it was is kind of how Boca Bayou is. So, if you're upset with me, you got good reason, because I haven't done it yet, because I can't find it exactly. So, Gasparilla Sound, Tailing Flats, Boca Bayou.
Redfish are starting to pop up everywhere, all through there. Snook are starting to move back in there, real good numbers. Getting some reports of a lot of small trout. Spanish mackerel have been on the edges of the channel of the ICW there, even a few bluefish moving into the flats too, that have been pleasant or aggravating surprises depending on who you talk to with it.
Right, depending on whether they're set up for that or whether they're using 20-pound fluorocarbon as their leader material.
Right.
We're also seeing some schools of jacks over there too. Lots of bait fish in that area, a whole lot of bait fish, but most of it is still pretty small stuff. And where you have those aggregations of open water predators feeding on the bait fish, that's where you're going to find those smaller sharks that you were mentioning looking for. They've been gathered up around Gasparilla in the deeper areas, talking about more than 10 feet, pretty nicely.
So,
it's starting to come back to life now. Basically, it's not the ghost town that it's been off and on for the last couple of months. It's getting far better and more consistent.
And as long as we keep red tide out of there, as long as that doesn't become a problem again, because it's not a problem right now, then things are only looking up.
Well, you know, I have a weird analogy for that area and the red tide, and it falls back to World War One. And in World War One, believe it or not, we did not win World War One, but neither did Germany. World War One, everybody got sick and went home, and literally millions of people died. But okay, million or million plus people died. Does that mean there was no more people there? Or, you know, and it's one of those weird things, whether it's fish, people, we have these bad outbreaks, we have a lot of things will die, and then all of a sudden there's all kinds of people and fish back in those areas. I don't know how it all happens or why it all happens, but it is a pretty different thing. And
but it's actually a good analogy, because
now, here's one thing for you, Josh.
Okay.
This is the thing. Robert has a theory, and I'm actually really on board with Robert's theory, because believe it or not, the blind tarpon's actually pretty smart.
I believe it.
He says the red tide is the forest fires of the ocean. And if you take our fish out of it and just look at algaes, bacterias, a lot of this other stuff, red tide could be the forest fire of the ocean.
Because forest fires to us look like horrible events. You know, you get used to this scenery, and now all of your trees are burned down, and you have all this vegetation that's been damaged, and, you know, it looks like a desert has been made. But it's not a desert, because if you come back and you look at it a month after the fire goes by, you'll see that you have all these little plants sprouting that weren't going to have an opportunity to grow before because there was too much vegetation standing in the way. So it's actually a renewal of that particular area. Now, the problem with this red tide is the area that it covered. You know, red tide covering small areas, I could see that being more analogous to a forest fire, because it would kind of take out some of the stuff in an area, but then there's nearby areas for that to grow.
By your own admission, there was a large sawdust algae bloom right before the red tide hit.
Yes, Trichodesmium.
And with that bloom hitting, and that kind of kicked off the red tide, we were getting a lot of bacterias, a lot of other algaes, a lot of stuff growing in those areas, which the red tide would have either poisoned or taken out their oxygen one way or another. It would have taken all that out. True or false?
Yes and no. I mean, when you get... Okay, but here's the thing. When you get red tide growing in a very heavy concentration, it's just like anything else growing in a heavy concentration. The cyanobacteria issue that they had on the Caloosahatchee and in Lake Okeechobee, if you looked in those particular areas, yes, the cyanobacteria was outgrowing other types of algae. You didn't have too much of that other stuff going on. Most of the nutrients were being taken up by the cyanobacteria.
Is that blue-green algae, cyanobacteria?
Yes, okay. Same thing. But I like cyanobacteria better, because blue-green algae is not always blue-green, and it's not actually an algae. Red tide, in the areas where it's growing heavily and abundantly, yes, it will use up a lot of the energy that would otherwise be taken by some of the other things that would grow in those areas, some of the other saltwater cyanobacteria, some of the other algaes that would grow there, but not all of it. It's not going to be...
But it would knock it back.
It will knock it back, yes.
And it will, in effect, in a lot of instances, actually clean the water more like a forest fire would. By your own admission,
okay,
it's
to,
take
some
out
extent,
most of it.
Yes, it's going to take out some of that. But as soon as you take the red tide out again, once the red tide drops back down to a more normal level, then things are going to grow again. Now, what I don't know about...
Isn't that what we just said about a forest fire?
What I don't know about. We've studied forest fires pretty much in depth, and we have a pretty good idea of what species overgrow before a fire and what species start growing again after the fire. And it's a whole different list of species. You get things that grow really well. If there's no fire in the area, fire comes through, knocks them back, a whole new list of species grows. What we don't know is in the water whether the same species will come right back or whether the species mix is going to be totally different. That's something that, as far as I know, hasn't been studied.
It's because Robert just came up with a theory, and nobody in the state is as good as our blind tarpon. Once, if they had Robert, they would have had studied this stuff. But without Robert, how are they ever going to figure it out? Now they will, because Robert's brought it out in the open. So we'll turn that into the state and say, hey, listen, this is what you guys, you know, forget about just studying red tide. Let's study the before and afters. And that should be a no-brainer, because they sample water anyway. So sample the stuff, find out what happens before the red tide, during the red tide, and then after. And did it make the area cleaner, better, more like a forest fire did? I'm just trying to stay on a positive note. Everybody always talks about how bad everything is. And
well,
I just don't want to do that.
That's the other similarity here, is that we tend to put things into categories of good or bad. And a forest fire is not good or bad. It's a thing that happens in an area where they happen a lot. The animals and plants are adapted to it, so they're able to survive.
Right,
same with red tide here.
All right, Robert, any on this before we move on to the Placita trestle?
Josh needs to show you that chart from the decades of the red tide, the studies that they've done, and I'm curious about a certain section. It's pretty fascinating.
FWRI has a chart that shows red tide, in whether it's in medium or higher concentrations or less than medium concentrations, month by month for most years since the 1940s and some years prior to that.
All right. So have you looked at the study?
It's not so much a study as whether or not red tide was present. It's what you could use to start a study, because look at all the correlations that go along with it.
Quiet. Just stop. Have you looked at the darn thing?
Yes.
Is there any conclusions that you've drawn from it?
The conclusion that you can draw is that we seem to be having more red tide between the years of, let's say, what was it, 1994 or 95?
94.
Until about 5 years ago. The concentrations of red tide during that period were much more intense. It was around most of the time.
And longer periods of time versus before that, it would show up for like this month, and this month, or for these two consecutive months.
That's what I've been trying to tell people.
But it had actually dialed back a little bit over the last 4 or 5 years.
And that's what I've been trying to tell people, that this is by no means the worst red tide we've had. I remember longer and more red tides than what we've had now. It's bad. It's getting bad again like it was. But I remember worse, a lot worse. And
right.
I remember, and it is exactly during those times of bad red tide, people are telling me, oh, I wish it was those years again. And
right.
I'm thinking to myself, are you out of your mind? There was horrible fishing during 92, 93. The fishing down here sucked. It was bad.
It wasn't always in the modern times either. We looked at the year before Hurricane Donna. For the whole 12 months from 1959 through 1960, before Donna, we had red tide.
And that was not modern. Okay, I'm sorry.
Not as modern.
Tell me about the Placita Pier and the Trestle.
Because you remember those years doesn't mean that it's modern times, Frank.
It was... Tell me about the Placita Pier and the Trestle out there.
Hey, the Placita Trestle is open now.
All right, Robert, come on. Sure news. I need some now. I'm beginning to, you know, feel, all right, I've been attacked, if not directly, indirectly, because, but then again, okay, you're right. I'm not modern. All right, I get it. Okay, I'm sorry. I want things analog. All right, go ahead. You're right. I just got upset for nothing.
You're recording this on a computer, Frank.
I get it. Okay. I hate it, but I get it. Okay, go ahead.
Placita Trestle. Well, he's got the old school and the new school. He's the stenographer and using the water and stuff at the same time.
Right.
So.
And he's still smoking indoors.
No, I'm not. I would never do that.
Never.
Never.
So, Placita Trestle is actually open now, so for shorebound fishermen, and the red tide is gone, there's going to be a lot more activity going on out there, and for being closed for several months, that means the fish might even be a little more dumb. So, mango snapper. Well, they aren't getting the pressure.
I get it. Okay, so for anybody who wants some stupid fish, go right out to Placita Trestle. We've got stupid fish, dumb fish, and we got that mildly retarded cousin fish that comes around there for Christmas. But other than that, we're doing real good out there, boys. All right, so what kind of mildly retarded cousin fish we got out there?
Mangrove snapper.
Okay.
Some bonnethead sharks. Been a few bluefish out there.
You know, I'm going to get hate mail because of you calling, you know, mangrove snappers mildly retarded cousin fish.
You're going to get hate mail for jumping right to the southern accent.
Well, I get hate mail all the time. Actually,
let's hear your dumb Wisconsin guy accent.
I don't know if I could do it right now. Dad, and be nice or I'll jump to my northeastern accent, which is the worst one anybody's ever had. Okay, go ahead. Because I'm horrible at it. Go ahead. I like the accent. I just can't do it.
Go ahead.
So, mangrove snapper at the Placita Trestle. Robert?
Hey, I tried. I had several other species going on there. You stop typing. You start talking about other stuff. Mangrove snapper, bluefish, some Spanish mackerel, an occasional pompano. Been some snook showing up out there. But, you know, like we were talking about earlier, the bait fish are starting to move in out there. It's all small stuff, little glass minnows, baby thread fins, a few greenbacks, but it's all little tiny, tiny stuff. You know, but it's all starting to light up really good out there. There has been some trout around the trestles there, but they're all small. I've not heard of any big ones.
You know, this is the wonderful thing about doing a podcast. Because all three of us have radio shows, and we broadcast live. And the problem is you've got commercials to deal with, you got time restraints to deal with, and you can't really go on and off topic the way we do as much here. I think there is something nice about having a non-podcast podcast, because you can't find this unless you actually know Fish and Franks. It's not advertised anywhere or anything. So our customers, our listeners enjoy...
Remember, y'all are lucky to be hearing this.
But it's different. Because once it's out in the general public, you get all these mean people that have no sense of humor. And we're really, I really feel we're lucky to be able to have an outlet like this where we can discuss different things. And, you know, even when I'm upset with people, I don't really mean harm by it. But it's sometimes you got to say what you think about stuff. Because... you don't think FWC was being mean or pissy about it, but to me, the reaction coming back from FWC, the local area officers and the people I spoke to on the phone initially were very nice and saying, okay, well, we've got unusual circumstances, let's see how best to work through it. And then all of a sudden, we get these people from the offices calling up saying, this is going to be it, we're going to, you know, send you to jail, ruin your life, lock you up, you know, and damn you, don't do any of this. And it's such a duality of ideas between the people who enforce and the people who make. So, anyway, but we are at Lemon Bay, believe it or not.
We've gotten that far.
It only took us an hour to get here.
Water's starting to clear up out there pretty good. The red tide has been little teeny tiny patches through there, but not enough of any significance to worry about. Guys are starting to catch a few trout in there, a few redfish. Snook are starting to move back into that ski alley area, and I'd imagine the rest of Lemon Bay. I haven't gotten any reports from my kayak guys in a while, but now that it's starting to clear up out there, I'm sure I'll hear more. Been hearing some reports of some baby gags and baby mangrove snapper even being caught as bycatch underneath some of the docks there.
Yeah, I do believe I need a new air conditioner. Every time that thing comes on, it sounds like we got a jumbo jet taking off during the show. And, all right, anything Lemon Bay, Josh?
I have not heard much from the Lemon Bay area. I've talked to some guys who have gone well up into the north end of it, and they have not found a whole lot of fish up there.
All right.
But they probably should have stayed further south.
I had a customer in who had some amazing stuff on the Anger Pier, and I can't remember everything he told me. We were actually quite busy at the moment. Awesome guy was fishing off the pier, and nice as he can be, and he caught a lot of fish. And I seem to remember some pompano mixed in with it, a lot of small snook, I mean, literally from 18 to 26 inches. But I don't really remember what he was saying, but this guy, you know, he's one of those truly wonderful customers who comes in and is just great to talk to, and we had a good time. But I was just kind of engaged in the conversation and forgot to write down the fish he told me.
Right.
So
yeah. This is the time of year when we usually see some plainhead filefish moving in on the pier there.
Plainhead filefish.
Yep.
Robert, this one's about you, buddy.
For most people, that's just going to be a little bait thief, that if you try to drop shrimp down alongside the pilings for mangrove snapper, or as we get into the cooler weather, sheep's head, the plainheads will be down there pecking away at your shrimp. That's one of your top bait thieves.
P-L-A-N-H-E-A-D.
P-L-A-N-E-H-E-A-D.
P-L-A-H-E-A-D, file fish.
Yeah.
Which looks like a trigger fish.
But it's smaller. The biggest ones I've seen out there are maybe 5, not quite 6 inches.
All right. If I've got this right, let's see. The plainhead filefish will be here to steal your bait.
Yes, they will.
Got it. Okay.
Small mangrove snapper, juvenile tarpon, some pompano, some small snook, couple of redfish, even a couple of Atlantic croaker have been caught off there this past week. A lot of people were fishing it Monday for the holiday, so got a handful of reports off of it.
Actually, it sounds like a pretty good spot to go to. A lot of cool places to go in Englewood. Stump Pass Marina's got a restaurant with it too. You can go there, buy a dozen shrimp, feed some cool snook. You can hit the restaurant there. You can go to Gasparilla Marina, right? And they've got, you can buy a dozen snook and a dozen shrimp and
buy
feed
a dozen
them.
Snook and feed the shrimps.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
And they've got a nice restaurant there on the water out in Englewood. There's a whole bunch of different places you can go. Go out, patronize some of the restaurants, check out some of the fishing. Just go to a couple places and see. It's back. It's cool. It's a place to go. And
they'll be very happy to see you, because those places have been hurting. I mean, this negative publicity has been bad for them, and there's no reason for negative publicity right now. Things are good.
Yeah. Englewood's alive and fine, and go out there and have a good time. Go to some of the restaurants and, you know, have a good day. You know, it's a great way. You can get out to Englewood, and it's literally like a Florida tourist town. It's not like Port Charlotte, where it's kind of just a town. When you get into Englewood, especially when you get around the beaches and all that stuff, and on Old 775 there, you've got some pretty cool places and some great stuff to do. So go out, take a day trip out to Englewood, and have a good time. Spend a little money with some of the businesses. They could use it. We'd like to, you know, keep some of those cool places. The Gulf of Mexico, reefs and wrecks.
It's all you, Josh.
It's all me. Well, I'll tell you what, reports have been a little spotty because a lot of people have not wanted to go out there and go fishing. But the guys who have been are reporting that things are actually not that bad. The one thing that I'm not hearing about is a lot of grouper being caught, which is kind of weird. But they're catching plenty of snapper, good mixed bags of those fish. Lane snapper are still fat, still very eager to hit out there. Mangrove snapper are decent on the ledges, not quite as many of them turning up on the artificial reefs or even on some of the natural hard bottom, but if you've got ledges out there, those have been pretty good spots to hit. If you're headed out deeper onto the taller artificial reefs, the wrecks, we're seeing some amberjack out there, good numbers of barracuda, and some of these fish have been impressively large. I had a guy tell me he was desperately trying to catch one that was about 5.5 feet long, and this guy fishes out there enough to know when a big barracuda is a big one. He said that it was only interested in fish that were being reeled up off the bottom. It would not hit anything else, but they caught plenty of smaller ones out there on Cuda tubes. So good mixed bag out there. not finding any of the tuna or the mahi that they had hoped to come across. But if you're fishing on the reefs, it's not bad.
Okay. Going down. All right. This is where we kind of go through the list of passes. Let me get this set. And all right, Venice.
It's starting to clear up, but there is enough patches of red tide up there where I haven't gotten any consistent feedback except for that.
I've been hearing about some mackerel and bluefish caught off of the jetty. There were also some scattered pompano reports and snook reports out on the beach right next to, but not quite in, the pass.
Did Sharky's open back up?
I do not know.
Like, all the Sharky's restaurant, the pier, everything, all the activities there have been closed for the last couple of weeks.
And if you haven't been to Sharky's, there is a restaurant there. It's not just a pier. They actually have food.
Have two restaurants there now.
Yeah, waiters, waitresses, food, the whole bit. And it's right there on the beach. Call Sharky's, and I think it's just called Sharky's Pier or something.
Sharky's
like
on the Pier.
Sharky's on the Pier. Call up there, see if they've reopened. If they have, just give them a call, get directions, go up to Sharky's on the Pier, get a sandwich, have a nice thing. You know, I mean, especially around sundown. Beautiful sunsets out there, and, you know, guys, give them a shot.
One other cool thing about that pier, the pier is actually the Venice Municipal Pier, and Venice, the city, pays for a fishing license for everybody who fishes on that pier. So if you've got relatives from out of town that are coming down, you don't want to get them a Florida fishing license, you don't want to pay for it, you can take them out onto the Venice Pier and they can legally fish from the pier without a license.
Because the city is paying for their license.
Correct.
So somebody has a license. It's not like you can go there and fish with no license. There is a license bought. But go have a
but
sandwich.
But you don't have to worry about it.
Right. You don't have to worry about it. You can go there, you know, get a sandwich, have a nice time, walk on the pier, fish a little bit. It's a good thing to do. All right, coming down, Stump Pass.
Stump Pass is starting to clear up a little bit. They're starting to see a few snook out there, a few jacks, a lot of bait fish moving around. Guys are seeing some other smaller fish swimming along the surf line, but haven't talked about the whiting or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So getting some activity there.
All right, Josh, Little Gasparilla.
You mean Gasparilla?
Whatever.
Gasparilla Pass has been okay. Heard about a couple of tarpon that were rolling in the pass that were unable to be hooked but were seen in there and moving around. Some ladyfish and jacks moving in there between the pass and the trestle. Looked like that was going pretty good. On the pass itself, a couple of pompano hooked right there off of the beach. And that's, I think about that, that's about it.
All right, Robert, Boca Grande.
Some pompano, not a lot, but incidental bycatch, some small snook. People are getting some Spanish mackerel out in the center along with some bluefish. And then there's been a lot of tarpon going in and out of there too. Pretty consistent, like, fishable numbers of tarpon. So that's what I would personally be doing. It's not bad. It's still brown water coming through there, but along the beach it's clearing up pretty good.
Okay, Josh, Captiva.
Captiva has had some Spanish in it. That's the only thing that I've heard.
Yeah, that's about all I've heard except for a couple tarpon that guys saw roll, but nobody's catching any.
Okay, and that's redfish.
I got nothing down there.
Mangrove snapper and redfish. Down on the bottom.
Jesse giving you a couple reports for it?
Yeah, I asked.
Yeah, there you go.
You gotta poke around with these guys a little bit, but yeah.
All right. Okay, now we're moving on to, if you're going to go out, can you walk the beaches somewhere and catch some fish while standing on shore casting out into the Gulf of Mexico?
Why not?
I'm going to say yes.
That's a lure from Gambler that's very popular amongst bass fishermen.
The why not?
Yes.
Because you're looking at it and you're supposed to say, well, why not?
Yeah, and I actually prefer the Strike King model a little bit better than that. They got a creature bait, but the why not's very popular right now, hooked up on these jigs for bass. So
I probably wouldn't be using it on the beach. No, I'd probably be using like a small jig or something
I
like that.
I thought you brought it up. I thought you wanted to know about the lure. So anyway, walking along the beach, what would you like to do?
First and foremost, if you're going to walk the beach, wear sandals or wading boots, because unfortunately, with the death out there, there is still some bones around and some little sharp, pokey things just to protect your feet, especially at the warm water. You know, no sense in hurting yourself for it. But the Stump Pass and Boca Grande are the only two places where I've had reports for land-based fishing. Snook, some jacks, incidental bluefish. Guys are seeing a lot more bait fish cruising along the beach. And like I said earlier, they're seeing some fish swimming in the surf line that are small and on the bottom, but not catching them. So I don't know if they're whiting or pompano or what they might be. What about you, Josh?
Could be both. Snook and pompano off Nokomis Beach.
That's okay. Positive. It's nice to see some life coming back up there.
Yeah. Very nice. And they're seeing stuff that's...
How do you spell Nokomis?
N-O-K-O-I-M-S. N-O-K-O-M-I-S.
N-O-K-O...
M-I-S.
M-I-S.
Nokomis.
Nokomis.
There's been some fish out a little bit farther that they're not able to
reach. I have another question for either one of you. Spell skeletons.
S-K-E-L-E-T-O-N-S.
Thank you. Okay, now we can move on.
I read a thing that I wrote in sixth grade. I was a really good speller when I was a kid, but I spelled it sklottens instead of skeletons, and I was very embarrassed by that.
It's sad when you find out what makes people the way they are.
Yeah.
Why are you the way you are? Because I misspelled skeletons.
In sixth grade.
It really hurts. You know, a lot of people, I mean, I've seen people literally go into therapy, end up, you know, in the bad part of town, wandering around with a grocery cart because of things like that.
Padded rooms. Yeah.
Oh. Fortunately, I beat that like I beat anorexia.
Yes. I would have to say you literally whooped up on that anorexia and just crushed it. I mean, you can be proud of the fact, Josh, that you have beat your anorexia.
I'm a survivor.
Yes, you are a survivor. All right. Ponderosa, Sanibel. Yeah, Robert, come on. I need a reporter, buddy. You can't just hang your head. Jeez. I need to bind tarpon. Come on, blonde tarpon. Tell me your fishing tale.
I got nothing for you, Don.
Blonde tarpon, I got something. Talks to fish.
You want me to whisper it to Robert so Robert can tell it to you?
No, this is Josh. If he's got something, I can't even make anything up.
We've had some smaller sharks down there. Pretty good numbers of them. Again, they're on those ladyfish, jacks, mackerel, that kind of stuff, which has also been down there in pretty good number. We're seeing bait fish returning. Maybe not quite as heavy as they are in some other areas, but pretty good patches of bait fish down there. Most of them, again, small. Don't throw a net on them. But we're seeing that kind of stuff. And then along the mangroves around St. James City, we're seeing some redfish showing up.
Really?
No reports any of the trout that are usually mixed in with those?
Nobody was talking about them if they were catching them. Maybe they just took them for granted.
Yeah. Well, with the redfish that are down there, it's not surprising.
Well, you know, people get excited
about that.
Yeah.
Okay. And I got to check my email to see if the guys from the store actually emailed a fishing report to me. I didn't see one, so they might have forgot. I mean, they're so busy.
Of course, you're talking about the North Fort Myers Fish and Frank's.
The North Fort Myers Fish and Frank's store. They're so busy. I mean, again, yeah, the store is not doing well at all with all of the problems there in North Fort Myers. I'm not sure how long that store is going to survive. But we're going to keep it in for a while. You know, it's just, how long do you flog that dead horse? You know?
Well, is it really dead or is it just in a coma?
It's in a coma because between the blue-green algae, the social media press, the news press, I mean, there's been so many fish around Mont Lachey, and it's been amazing. There's great restaurants in Mont Lachey. You can go down to Boquilla. There's all these awesome places. St. James City. There's so many cool things down there, and there's actually fish, and the water's nice, and there's no problem. But you couldn't tell that from anything else. So, I think the thing that I always want to try and find a positive aspect to stuff. Not that I think red tide is good, but I don't really believe many things are all truly all bad. So I want to find what's good and what's bad and everything, and I just don't understand why people are so fascinated with the horrible, and I guess, but I never watch a horror movie. I don't watch them, I don't like them, I don't need them. I don't get that, but most people do watch them. They're very popular.
Well, we like the horrible because it lets us kind of look at this is how bad it could be, and we can plan for the worst that could possibly happen. And that's kind of what horror movies are about, is thinking of the worst.
It's about thinking of the worst, but it's not... I mean, horror movies show you... Nobody plans for anything. They just walk outside in their underwear in the dark looking for an axe murderer while they have a candle. So, Robert, anything on the clues? While hiding in a room with axes. Do you have anything for the clues, Hachi?
No, unfortunately, I do not.
Josh?
I do not either.
Yeah, I didn't get a report from the North Fort Myers store either. So, moving on, because you guys got anything in Cape Coral?
Define Cape Coral, the canal system?
Canal, anywhere on Cape Coral.
Some of the guys have been finding some cool fish in the canals. The redfish have moved up into there as well, and their mangrove snapper bite has been pretty good, and they're seeing some that are a little bit bigger than what we're seeing up here in our canal system. They're seeing 10, 12-inch fish, so they're actually getting some keepers. The odd thing is they don't seem to have as many black drum.
Really?
Yeah. Seem to get more of those up here.
Reports of the black drum down there, which is always odd to me.
Well, it could be because of the way they school in those big schools and just naturally disperse at the upper end of the harbor, where Cape Coral is so far down south on the harbor and the water's much shallower down there on the average. I mean, they do have the deeper channels. But a lot of the Cape Coral canals you got to go through to get, you know, into the Coosahatchee a bit to get into them. Some of them empty out. But I think it's the water depth that would keep the black drum up in the Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda canals rather than, and I mean the water depth outside of the canals,
not in the canal itself.
But the water depth outside of the canals, I don't think they're going to have... The schools would have the ability, you know, to do what they do in that deeper water, all schooling up. It would be a more natural dispersion in the upper canals.
We rate your theory as plausible.
Okay. Matt Lachey, what's going on there?
It's been actually pretty good from the pier itself. Been getting some reports of the snook, some mangrove snapper, an occasional redfish, and then south and north of it, the redfish along the mangroves have been doing incredible. Been a handful of trout. Most of them have been small, but a few legal-sized fish being caught throughout there. And then a lot of reports of small snook. So kind of a good little mixture of stuff.
Some of those redfish are actually forming schools, too. Had two different reports of schooling, tailing redfish down there around the oyster bars.
Hey, that's a plus. That's a real good thing. What are they catching them on?
Oh, they weren't catching them.
They're just looking at them.
They're watching those tailing redfish, thinking, man, I wish my boat went shallow enough to go over there.
Yeah.
You know, remember those six-wheel vehicles? You know, they had six wheels, and you could drive them around like a four-wheeler, like then drive them right into the water.
Yep.
And I always thought about getting one of those. I said, that's like, you know, some of these areas in Charlotte Harbor just are not accessible, especially on different tides and stuff.
You need that or an airboat.
Well, the problem with an airboat, way too much noise, way too much problem. I know airboats don't really scare fish as much as we think they would because the air is above the water that's making the noise. But I would think one of those little buggy things would be kind of cool.
It'd just be fun and different because everyone would be staring at you going, what the heck is that?
When I was doing charters, I always thought about getting one because I could put in at ponds, go across the canal, and just drive all the way around to some of those places in the winter that are just totally behind dry land fishing in a barrel. But the only reason I didn't is they're actually quite a bit of money, thousands of dollars, and it's salt water.
Right.
And if you drive one of those buggies...
It's going to be great for a season.
Fresh water, they're going to last a long time. But I don't know what putting one of those into salt water, if I'm going to spend like $6,000-$8,000 and have one season before the bearings are rotted out, everything's rotted out, I haven't found one where they said it's okay for saltwater. They say, oh yeah, it goes in the water all over the place. And then I find out they mean swamps and lakes.
Yeah.
And I just, it's a lot of money to spend on a maybe, you know, and watch the saltwater eat it apart. So anyway, I'm sorry about that. Okay, just random thoughts. Pine Island.
What has this report been except for random thoughts strung together with fishing reports?
Yeah.
So I thought that was why you had me come in, to make them like that. No, I thought that
I literally thought we were going to be done in 45 minutes this morning.
How's that working out?
Yeah, we're pushing a bit more than that.
When has the fishing report ever been 45 minutes?
We've done it.
55
minutes. A lot of times when it's just me and you, we can get in
there. There you go. That's what I'm saying. You've met me, right?
You had to throw Josh into it and just screwed up the whole timeline.
Well, all right.
Parallel universe is a little cockeyed.
Well, you know, I did have radiation treatments. Once they shot that radiation into my brain, I have an excuse. You know, it's like Josh. He misspelled skeleton. I had radiation.
Come on.
He had slotten on his sixth grade report.
What's the matter?
I have had radiation treatments in my brain. I can literally say I'm brain dead at least for part of
it. It's the same thing.
So since I hang out with the both of you, that just means I'm like special, like crayon eater, short bus special.
Yes. The blonde tarpon eats crayons.
I've got a vision disorder, but that really doesn't affect the thought process too much.
Well, you didn't think it did.
Right.
Maybe you just haven't noticed what's going on.
Wow.
Okay, Pine Island Sound.
Pine Island Sound's finally starting to clear up. Getting a few reports of some redfish, a few snook, and the where am I at now? The
what does it look like? Describe it.
Yeah, trout, a lot of bait fish, a few Spanish mackerel and bluefish. Basically, the whole area is starting to come back to life, which is a real nice treat to see.
And the sharks have been on and off in through there. That's the one place where I've been hearing about people finding some larger sharks. They didn't know what they were. They thought they were sand sharks. They did. They literally thought they were catching sand sharks, which is not a species. I explained it to them and went through the whole thing and said, here's how you can identify some of the sharks that you're catching. And from that explanation, they thought they might have been catching bull sharks or lemon sharks, but they weren't really sure.
I would say this time of year, lemons.
So they were pretty good sized fish. They were somewhere in that 7 foot range.
And
so
lemons easily get around
7 to 9 feet what I expect to see for lemons.
Yeah, so I would say they were lemons. We thin out quite a bit on the bull sharks this time of year, but seem to do a lot more lemon sharks. So anyway, Jug Creek Shoals, Boquilla.
I've got nothing there.
I haven't heard anything from Jug Creek, but Boquilla has had, again, pretty good population of redfish moving around there. They're also seeing a few pompano moving through there, too.
What about the bait fish and stuff like that? Is it all starting to come back to life?
Nobody's been really talking about that. The people that I talked to were actually fishing the pier.
Okay.
That pay pier on the north end of the island.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I actually have heard of
a long time. A
couple of guys went down there, were actually able to catch some bait. Most of it's very small, but they there was some decent sized bait there. But it's
throw a 16th inch net.
Yeah, well, the problem is
there was a seine net.
You're gonna get a lot of the tiny stuff, and it's a shame. Okay, Burnt Store, Two Pines.
A lot of redfish along there. Getting some really good reports of redfish on there, and I don't know if the big schools have moved in out there, but guys have been catching them out on the bar, in the trough, and up against the mangroves in a little bit better numbers, along with a lot of small snook, an occasional pompano, and an occasional trout. Yeah, but those have been real scattered on those two fish.
Heard about a couple of cobia in that area right along the bar. Did not appear to be keeper fish, so they didn't pursue them. But they were kind of hanging back, spotting them. They were actually fishing for the mixed bag of open water predators that have been out there, the jacks, the Spanish, that kind of stuff. But they were watching the cobia moving along the bar.
Okay. East side of the harbor.
Go for it.
I haven't heard much out of the east side. Once you get north of Pirate Harbor and south of Gator Creek, I haven't heard much going on down there.
Actually, I've heard there's actually quite a few snook up under the mangroves. Redfish starting to do a little better back, not the outer set of islands, but the more inner islands. And by where that big oyster bed is over there. And actually doing a lot better than it was.
Yeah, I've only been hearing about the redfish and just scattered, but nothing phenomenal, but on the increase.
Yeah, things are getting much better on the east side. Guy went down the other day, and the east side was literally loaded with boats, end to end, people fishing all over the place. He said he saw several people, you know, hooking fish, so it was actually doing better. All right, Alligator Creek, Poacher's Cut, skating rink.
Skating rink has had some fish in it. I've talked to some guys who are actually wade fishing redfish over there. They're not finding them right up along the bush edges. They were finding them more out in open water, looking in the on the edges of the deeper cuts.
I've just heard of some jacks inside Alligator Creek. That's about it. And the same thing with the redfish as far as what Josh just said. That was my reports for the redfish, too.
Okay, getting into Ponce de Leon Park.
Couple of redfish caught off the pier, but they seem to be catching more snook and mangrove snapper. Didn't hear anything about snook being decent size. Everything seems to be under 20 inches, but there are some fish there.
Been a few black drum coming through there too, sporadically, along with the jacks. Yeah, but they haven't been consistent, but they have been coming through. And the jacks have been pretty good size, 5 to 10 pounds. So that's always fun in that little channel, especially if you got boats coming or going.
Mm-hmm.
Navigate around that.
Define fun.
Exciting, entertaining,
eating
frustrating.
Pancakes with maple syrup while riding a roller coaster in Arkansas on a rainy day in a thunderstorm. Wow. Well, you asked.
I don't see why they have to be pancakes. I prefer waffles.
Sounds like
it's just not as much fun. That's why you do pancakes. Okay, PGI canals.
Big jacks, you know, 10 pounders pretty consistently, especially at the mouths. Lots of big black drum, same areas. Getting reports of snook, jewfish, a few redfish, tons of mangrove snappers you get up inside the canal systems. And a lot of tarpon rolling around up inside there, too.
Sounds like you talked to more people who fished PGI than I did.
Going on to Gilcrest Pier.
Crickets.
Mr. Josh, Gilcrest?
I got nothing.
All right. Alligator Creek Reef.
There's been some tarpon on it here and there, but other than that, I haven't heard not much at all.
I got nothing.
What the heck?
Richie caught a couple of cobia there.
Okay.
Doesn't Richie always catch cobia there?
Yeah, it's really hard to say if a normal human could, like, catch cobia there, because Richie's, like, taken on another level. He's ascended to, you know,
hey, one of these days you should have Richie on here and talk to him about cobia.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. I've actually asked him to do it. Deep holes in the harbor.
Lots of catfish, but the tarpon have been out there pretty regularly. They do play some disappearing acts pretty regularly, too. Nobody's really sure where they're going, but that's been the main focus out there, is chasing the tarpon. And while doing that, an incidental bycatch of triple tail. And for no random reason, out in the middle of literally open water, eating a bait buster, which is really exciting and kind of questionable.
Triple tail do what triple tail do.
Yes they
just
do.
The way it is.
Are you waiting on us, Jeff? What's wrong?
Internet. I'm just trying to get that rebooted.
Okay.
All please right. Ignore this brief pause in the action while Frank discusses shop talk with one of his people.
Hang on just a minute. All right, the deep holes in the harbor. Did you miss me? We had to stop, reboot all the stuff, come back. You know, did you miss
us? If you don't tell them, then they didn't miss anything, because it doesn't even pause. Why would you even ask that? You're just making it weird, Frank.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't like keeping secrets. It's not a good idea. All right.
Didn't we say the deep holes in the tarpon were full of tarpon?
Yes, we got through the deep holes, and now we're going on. I don't really know, is there still anything to do with a bait report? I think most of the bait is just too tiny.
Eensy weensies.
Very, very tiny, and the ones that are out there, the majority of them that the guys are netting are thread fins, and they aren't doing well anyway in your well.
You can go catch some pinfish.
Anywhere.
If you're into that kind of stuff.
Where?
Pretty much all the grass flats have had pinfish on them, which is evident if you're out there fishing with shrimp. It becomes pretty quickly.
Placida, devilfish, bokelia, and this down by Two Pines. And they're starting to get a little bit more size to them now. That's why the redfish and other fish are starting to convert over to feeding on them.
And that's why they're taking your shrimp so readily, because it only takes three of them to tear your shrimp apart instead of 14 like it did before.
Okay. I'm not doing the red tide thing right now. Freshwater. What do we got freshwater fishing? I don't remember the name of that Strike King jig with all the rubber coming off of it. Hack Attack. And the Hack Attack jig with the, what did I say that lure was? The Why Not.
Why Not?
So you take,
I was
going to
say
attack,
a mud bug.
Yeah,
that was
Hack
net.
Attack jig. You put the Why Not body on the hook as a trailer, and they're punching the weeds with them, and the bass are really getting into this. This is a big thing right now. Seems like a lot of the stuff maybe get cleared out from underneath the lily pads, but a lot of these lily pads, the bass are underneath that. The guys are punching through with a Hack Attack jig, 3/4 to 1 ounce jig, with the Why Not trailer on it, and really doing great on the bass.
I heard the catfish bite's been pretty good in Rotunda.
A lot of the bullheads.
No, they've actually been mostly channels and a couple of blues.
Really? No, they're the same species of blues that are from everywhere else.
The same blue catfish, yes. The blue catfish that does not belong here. The blue catfish that is supposed to be in the Mississippi Basin, but that people have brought here and released, and they seem to be doing pretty well.
How come you never hear of any big ones?
Yeah, the same reason we don't get those big channel catfish. You know, you go into other places and, you know, there's channel catfish when you get into North Florida and up into the middle part of the country where they're seeing channel catfish 40, 50, 60 pounds. But
right. We
don't see channel cats that big here in Peninsular Florida. The biggest one I've ever seen is probably about 15, and people were amazed at the size of that fish. You know, you get into the Midwest and a 15-pound channel cat is like, a nice catfish, but you didn't catch anything special.
Yeah, it's just
so
kind of weird.
I don't think we don't have the right habitat to grow those fish really big. Where they seem to grow them huge is in large rivers, and we just don't have that.
Okay. I guess I'll go with that. Bass fishing still doing good in all the Port Charlotte, North Port canals, because the spillways are running really hard, so are the culvert pipes. Any place where you got good moving water, they're catching them on shiners, are working still very, very good. A couple guys have started to pick up some spinner baits this past week, so I'm assuming that the bite's been starting to pick up on that. And of course, you just really can't go wrong with the worms, because we're selling a lot of worms and lizards lately, too.
Worms.
Now, worms for as far as plastic worms,
plastic worms, yeah.
Okay. Ribbon tail.
All of them. They're buying all sorts. They're buying them. They're rigging them up weedless, wacky style. I mean, they just, the worms have really kind of picked up this past week significantly. And then the only thing I'm not hearing about, which is strange, is like the bluegill and panfish. I mean, a handful of guys are fishing for them, but usually when it's flowing like this, you hear the guys just wanting to go target all the panfish, and I'm just not getting those reports.
Yeah, that bite seems to be only okay, not great. And even the Mayan cichlids in most places are not feeding the way that you would expect them to.
Right. It's been a little off on that part of it, which is just a little strange to me.
I have heard about a few crappie caught over this past week, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I've heard of a couple of bluegill, too, but nothing consistent.
Yeah.
You know, they're usually targeting all those panfish right now with this water and newt.
At Morristown in the Everglades, they had some really fun times with everything from the Mayans and just all the exotic fish, and even some regular Florida bass, panfish, and all that. But the Everglades are really good fishing right now.
Is he in the Glades or is he over in West Palm?
He did both.
He was in the Glades for a few days, and they really caught a lot of fish, mostly on beetle spins. Then he's fishing the stick marsh this week. He's got a couple of customers, and he's up there fishing a stick marsh with them. And they've got like 3 bass over 10 pounds so far.
Jeez. Awesome.
Yeah. All right. The tarpon, which I'm going to just quickly bring up my tarpon map if I can get them. All right. Give me just a second. All right. Get my brush size. And let's do red dots first, I guess.
Mouth of the Mayaca. All the way through the 20-foot holes to the pass, Boca Pass, and out along the beaches.
And in Boca Grande Pass?
Yeah.
All right. Now, what I'm going to do is I got a red dot in the mouth of my eye, and then I'm going to do kind of a 50-50 over to the holes. And now, those tarpon got to be heading out towards the pass. Are they cutting closer to Cape Hayes or cutting closer to north end of Pine Island?
Pretty much straight down the center.
Josh?
Couldn't tell you. Haven't talked to people fishing that area for them.
One day they're catching them at Cape Hayes, and next day they're catching them closer towards Boquilla. So they're kind of like straight down the center of that.
Okay. I'm hearing good things along the beaches.
Yes, very good.
Where are we looking for along the beaches right now?
A mile to 10 miles out.
Okay.
I mean, they're catching them north from Boca, heading north up towards Stump Pass. So there have been the reports I've been getting. I haven't gotten anything for down south at all. You know, I even had one reported guy seeing a whole bunch of them at the Palm Island Ferry this past week, which is 12 miles offshore. So, good scattered numbers of fish out off the beaches.
But this is seeing or this is catching?
Both.
Anything?
They saw the fish on the Palm Island Ferry, but I've had guys out there that were catching them, hooked them on the power pole reef end of last week.
So is there anything yellow dot that we should go anywhere, which is kind of a 50-50?
Put one up there in Tippy.
Okay. And any other places you guys can think of?
Early morning at El Jobin and the 41 Bridge, because that's about a 50-50, but most of those are the juveniles.
Yeah, I got to change the color for the darn night dots, and got to do one for small. Anything down around Punarassa, Sanibel, anywhere down there?
Very little reports, nothing consistent.
All right, anything we should do as a white dot where, you know, slight chance?
That's where I would put your Punarassa.
Okay. Yeah, Punarassa, Quarantine Rocks, and Captiva, maybe.
Okay. All right, okay, I'll save that. And this comes the time of the show where Josh looks forward to every time. Do you have any final thoughts?
Final thoughts.
Why do I do this?
My head is as close to empty as it gets right at the moment, actually.
That happens?
It does. I'm transitioning right now, actually, between the thing that we're doing and the thing that I need to do, which is to get some stuff done for waterline this week, because I've got things to do early this week, so I'm trying to get as much waterline done as I can this weekend. And in order to properly go from one to the other, I need to kind of empty it out just for a brief moment so I can refill it.
And then the moment's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Did that help?
No. Does this?
The mine was a styrofoam float. You like threw hooks at me.
There's no hook in that.
I threw a styrofoam float at him, thinking that, well, maybe a surprise would, like, you know, clear him out. Throw the scissors at him. Yes.
Okay. That's not fair. I do have things with hooks. This has 2 trebles in it. But
just hold it by the non-pointy end and throw it at him. It'll be fine.
You know.
It's a zipper rig, Frank.
Yes. There's a broken-off zipper with a very mutilated plastic shrimp body, who I'm sure, while you were sitting there and you were just doodling, you ripped all the legs and everything off. Okay. It's fine.
That shrimp has been over here for months,
And it was time for him to die.
The legs have come off one at a time over a long period.
Yes,
all right?
Which makes it okay.
You don't provide enough toys in this office, so I go with what I've got.
I get it. Okay.
Speaking of dying, it's time to kill this report.
Yeah, I need a little bit of something about tarpon. Just tell me, like, are they moving in the harbor? What's going on in the holes, and how do you find them on the beach? Something like that.
They're moving around a lot. You know, they're finding them in the holes, and then the next day there's better numbers out on the beaches. They're feeding on bait busters, and ladyfish are basically the two primary prey items. The only thing I haven't heard of anyone trying so far is pinfish. And if you can find those four or five inch pinfish, there's times where
you're gonna tie them in the tank in there.
I know.
Makes them easy to find, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. If you can get those, take those with you and try them, because this is the time of year where sometimes that pinfish will work out very, very well if you can get it past the catfish. You know, so,
and that's why you need a bigger pinfish, because if you put a smaller one out there, the catfish just slurp them right down.
Exactly.
But this is why the ladyfish is better, because it's much harder for a catfish, as big as he might be, to suck that ladyfish down. Not saying it can't happen. But
yeah, they'll absolutely try, but there's times where they just ignore that ladyfish, and that pinfish for some reason works a little bit better. No real reason for it, just happens to work out that way that I'm aware of. But be looking, you know, start at the upper end of the harbor if you're putting in up here, and work your way down to the pass and then out along the beaches, and zigzag a long ways offshore. Head out to up to 10 miles looking for those fish, and you're going to see them rolling. You're seeing fish free jumping. There's good numbers of fish. You know, and some of them are going to get ready to start to go into that migration thing, but the majority of them are still going to be here for at least another 4 or 5 weeks before we get our first minor to significant cold front, theoretically.
Yeah, and keep your eyes peeled, because some of these fish rolling are not going to be as obvious as you might hope for them to be. Number one, with the rivers flowing as hard as they are, there's more oxygen in the water, there's less need for those fish to roll. Number two, a lot of these fish have been hanging out in the rivers for the past couple of months due to the red tide issues, so they're going to be dark. They're not going to be those super silvery sea bright fish that we're expecting to see. They don't glint quite as much in the sunlight. So look carefully.
Okay. Final thoughts, anybody?
This is the time of year to be ready for everything. You know, okay. Take small poles and big poles with you, because anything's possible right now.
And with the way fish have been bottled up in the harbor, you know, and everything has been kind of forced in here because the red tide issue has done that. Now they have an opportunity to move around. They might be almost any place. So be ready to explore some places. Like Robert said, you got all your tackle with you. So, you know, just be open to new experiences right now.
Okay, I'm open to a new experience. There's the music, and our way out of this.
Finally.
And I see a light at the end of the tunnel. I'm pretty sure it's the headlight of a train, but
I'll take it.
Go for it anyway. At least if I get hit by the train, it'll carry me out the other side of the tunnel. But we've spent enough time in this tunnel, I'm ready to get out either on the front of the train or get able to walk through the hole. Okay, boys and girls, Fishing Frank here. Robert, the blind tarpon, in the chair across from me, and Captain Josh Olive.
Fishcoach.net.
Fishcoach.net. If you go there, you can find the Fish Coach. Okay.
Thanks, kids.
All right. Bye, boys and girls.